This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
Once again for another edition of the Carol Cox program on K108.
Walk on this side of the street. Don't walk where it feels the best. Walk away from people you meet. Don't talk to strangers unless they walk the way you want them to. Don't walk unless the others do. I said walk like you can use a ride. And don't walk with a confidence drive. I didn't mean go and walk all over you. Till I tell you to. Don't talk if it's against the rules. Just walk away and be a fool. That's what they want you to do.
Sure sounds different. That's not the Prince I know. Anyway, that is Prince and Walk, Don't Talk on K108 on the Carol Cox Show for this Sunday, the 27th of September. It's final week of September. We got Panos Pervadoris in the studio with us this morning, and we'll be talking with him right after we talk with Carol here.
Okay, real briefly, Panos has more to say and more important things than I do.
That's fine.
I'm always, thank you for joining us, and I announced last week I'd have you.
Yeah,
and,
thank you. I enjoy being here.
And I take this opportunity as best I can, because we see the other side talking, mm-hmm. and I wake up in the morning and there's a new revelation, and we find that something wasn't disclosed, and then it
right.
everybody get up in arm, and then it fizzles, and mm-hmm. and so when you and I talked and you were willing to come on, I thought, great.
Sure.
And so thank you for coming. But I want to real quickly
go ahead
to share with the listeners out there, again, 524-1080 is the number if you have any questions or comments. And also, the gentleman out there that calls in is anonymous. Just call yourself Bob or anything. I just feel so uneasy speaking with anonymous. So, again, as always, you're welcome to call in. And if you got to call yourself Fred, Bob, James, whatever. But, you know, I like to humanize things at least as best I can. So, but also I wanted to thank you for the groundswell support out there. We have had 18,000 downloads from the carolcox.com regarding the Norman Payne story. And as some of you saw last night, it was announced on major networks here that Norman Payne will not be prosecuted. And an interesting footnote is Pam Burns, the director of the Hawaiian Humane Society, and I don't have it in front of me, but paraphrasing that, she in turn, rather than taking it gracefully and recognizing the real authority, she indicated, I'm told, that, and again, I haven't seen the actual document of her quotes, but what was conveyed to me is that she attempted to explain it, that she did have complaints. But if you remember, I reported originally on her website, she claims to not have any complaints. But anyway, just having said that, thank all of you. And again, some of you probably say, well, you're a media and you shouldn't advocate. Well, I don't want to be confused. I'm not media. I'm a citizen who tend to be more sensitive than the average citizen. So that's why I'm here. I want to speak out and try and bring sunshine to some of this viral or bad behavior. Sunlight and light disinfect all the bad things in life, believe it or not. So anyway, said all of that, thanks again. And Panas, thank you. And then I wanted to talk to you about, again, Mufi Rail versus the Bishop Estate, versus Phoenix Rail, the D.C. and the Miami hot lanes. Where's the Mufi's rail now, and all of that.
But we have a full plate for today.
And I'll also, as always, allow myself to make this invitation to the mayor. If Mr. Mayor would like to come on and talk about it, more than welcome. I'll extend him the same courtesy. So there is my open invitation publicly. Okay. Panas, so, talk to me about the Mufi Rail versus the Bishop.
Yeah, let's talk about the city proposal first. Just to refresh our listeners' memories, we are in the environmental process, and now we have entered the preliminary engineering stage for designing a 20-mile fully elevated heavy rail system from about a mile outside of Kapolei to Ala Moana Shopping Center. By the city's own numbers, this will cost somewhere in the order of $5.4 or $5.6 billion. Now, the advertiser some time ago put it on a Sunday on the cover of the paper that this translates in $4,300 for every Oahu resident. This also means that basically the average family of four will pay something near $19,000 to $20,000 if you believe the city numbers. Now, there are folks like Cliff Slater that works very well with numbers, and he has found a lot of statistics from the FTA from past rail projects that show that typically all train projects go 40% over budget. So we are talking about a liability in the order of $22,000 per family on Oahu in terms of taxes to build this. Okay, we'll come back to this project now. Let's compare it now. About maybe not a month ago, a little less, Bishop Estate published a report. They hired a New Jersey rail expert to respond to what they feel are a lot of citizen groundswell, as well as the planners and the architects, that they say that this city deserves a light-duty, light rail system, as opposed to a fully elevated system with giant stations and all. So light rail is the word. Now, this is where we caught Mayor Hanneman in a lie, because in the 2008 election, all his commercials paid by city taxpayers and all, he kept calling it light rail, light rail, light rail. Now the word is out, and the advertiser at last printed it, that we are essentially developing what is called officially rapid transit or heavy rail. The word heavy rail is not used really very commonly. They call it rapid transit. The fully elevated train is called rapid transit. The older name for it was heavy rail. Most cities don't want heavy rail systems because they go and they dissect neighborhoods. They're very heavy construction. You have monstrous stations. I mean, the stations have the length of a football field, and they're very wide and, you know, very, very large. So they don't belong to a pretty city in a small island like ours. So Bishop Estates says maybe we can do light rail. Well, what Bishop Estates and their design engineer did was a hybrid, which has 10 miles of elevated and 10 miles of at grade. See, the definition of light rail is it has to be at grade for the super majority of the route. It doesn't mean that it has to be in the middle of the street. It can be at grade somewhere. It can go through a park. It can go, it can use the sidewalk if the sidewalk is humongous, whatever. Rapid transit is always grade separated, so it flies over the houses, the residences, the parks, whatever it goes through. Now, the issue with the Bishop Estate, now, the Bishop Estate advantage is where we arrive in the city, like from Chinatown, Dillingham, all the way to Ala Moana is at on the ground. So it makes it friendly looking.
Right.
Because the stations are small, they're, you know, it's like a major large bus stop and all. The problem is technologically, there is no such system in the world that a system will be, you know, fully elevated for 10 miles and then it'll come down. There are some technical issues there because when it's fully elevated, it gets its power from the third rail, from the side of it. When you're on the street, you cannot have a third rail with, 1,000 volts right there. So it has to be elevated or it has to be underground. So a little bit of technological issues there of where that this system is going to draw the power. Now, then the mayor's people shot back and they said, hey, listen now. These guys are going in the middle of Hotel Street. But Hotel Street dead ends essentially on Iolani Palace. Then there is Richard Street. But that street is a 90-degree turn where YWCA is. How is a train going to possibly make that turn? So there are some technological difficulties with the Bishop Estate. The attractive part of it is that it's only, in quotation marks, is $3.7 billion. So it cuts the price by more than 30%. So you get rail, but you get it 30% cheaper, and it's friendlier and looks better in the city if you believe that it is doable. Now, an additional objection I would have is that these trains will be in the middle or on the sides of Kapiolani Boulevard. Now, Kapiolani Boulevard is a very, very busy street. First of all, this is an invitation for accidents. Secondly, it will be inefficient. I mean, the train will be caught in the congestion, or if you give that lane exclusively to the train, then Kapiolani becomes a two-lane road per direction. That's too little. I mean, we really cannot afford to spare lanes to give to others. Let's go to Phoenix now. Phoenix is a clean system. It's done already. I mean, it was built and opened roughly 6 months ago. It's fully light rail, same size as ours, 20 miles. Now, here is the funny part, so to speak. Phoenix put this on the ground for $178 per citizen, per resident. I mean, even if it's a mistake, a tax outlay of $178 is nothing terrible. It's terrible to waste money in general, but at least this doesn't break anybody's back, really. $178 one time to build it. Compare that next to it with a city's estimate of $4,300 per citizen. I mean, that will break a lot of people's backs. I mean, this is really sucking a lot of money out of the society to put it in infrastructure, in concrete, steel, computers and trains and whatever. So huge difference. Now, even in Phoenix that they had their act together and the system seems to work, the local newspapers found out and the Metro did an audit of itself and they were alarmed because after about 100 days of operation, they realized that their utility bills, their electricity draw was 40% higher than expected. So it was costing them a lot more to operate. And they decided to, you know, try to check on the technology to see what's going on with that. Why is it drawing so much power? And One of the interesting revelations was that, you know, Phoenix, like Honolulu, they're very warm places. So they need to chill the stations. They need to chill even the ticket machines.
Right.
Because the ticket machines, as they wait out there to dispense tickets, they may overheat. They break down. People cannot buy tickets. So these systems, people have to understand that they're very complicated.
And Phoenix has a drier, more arid.
More drier. And,
not a
salt.
Marine, no salt.
Yeah, there is no salt. There is nothing in the air. So, you know, their long-term outlook, as long as they spend the electricity, is pretty good. I mean, those devices would likely stay, you know, in operating condition.
Now, what is the number of users in Phoenix? How many people are going to be, it's going to serve opposed to the number of people here in Honolulu?
Much less.
Okay.
Much less.
Uh-huh.
Because it's a light rail system, it's smaller capacity.
Mm-hmm.
They expect that they have hit their ridership target. The point is that for that system, and everybody knew that the ridership target was very low.
Mm-hmm.
Something in the order of 15 to 20,000 passengers a day. It was easy. They kind of met the ridership target almost immediately. Not in Seattle. We can talk about Seattle in a little bit. Here, the minimum expectation is 89,000 a day.
So
it's a huge difference.
We have a larger user group, which would normally mean that it might be cheaper, right? Or shouldn't it be? If Phoenix is drawing from a smaller population.
No, larger. Much larger.
It's much larger?
Phoenix is 5 million.
Okay, and
Phoenix
is
5 million.
So
we are about a million.
Okay, right.
Yeah, right.
So that's trying to get at that.
Right.
So we are less riders with higher costs.
Exactly. But the difference in Phoenix is that, and that's why the ridership estimation was more rational, is because the Phoenix is spread out. A lot of it is almost all of it is suburban.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that Mayor Hahnemann is building suburban rail.
Mm.
Because until rail really hits Salt Lake and Kalihi, the rest of it is suburban communities. I mean, Pearl City is in Pearl City, that is the big joke. And it doesn't go through the community. It goes on top of Kamehameha Highway.
Mm-hmm.
You look to the left, you look to the right, is a shopping mall and car dealerships.
Right.
Who's going to ride the train? Where is the homes? The homes are up the hill.
Right.
How are these people going to come down?
Now, these are the things that attract me to the subject. It just does not pan out when it...
Exactly.
You know, less users and we're paying more money. Maybe we're just trying to emulate the bigger cities when maybe we should consider the light rail and maybe that
light
should be a bigger factor.
Light rail or hot lanes or automated buses, something, you know, much friendlier, much lower cost.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Honolulu really loses tremendously in terms of population once you exit the core. Honolulu is basically Kalihi to Waikiki.
Mm-hmm.
Once you move outside of that, and there is, well, not to criticize it that is wrong or right, but it's low density.
Right.
This is the understanding. Once it's low density, public transit does not work. Because public transit, by the definition of it, is high capacity.
Mm-hmm.
But high capacity means you have a lot of people waiting for you to get in. How are they going to get in? They are 1 mile, 2 miles, 5 miles away.
Right.
Okay, so you're going to have, they say, feeder buses. Are you kidding me? I mean, people that they want to work downtown and all, they're going to spend 1 hour waiting for transfers. And inconvenience is really the name of not the game. Convenience is the name of the game. That's why people use the automobile. They may even decide to pay tolls to go faster and on and on. Of convenience.
Mm-hmm.
Train by itself is convenient if it's very close to your home. If it's over a quarter mile away, who's going to dress up in the morning and walk over a quarter mile just to catch the train?
Now, 524-1080, this is Panos Prevedoris with Carol Cox. If you'd like to call in and have a question or comment, please feel free, 524-1080. But one of the things I want to make sure that I don't want anybody to go away thinking that you and I are sitting here bitter about anything. And what are your qualifications? What is, just quickly, your background on this?
Well, I have master's and PhD degrees in transportation engineering. I'm a professor of civil engineering at the University of Hawaii. My specialty is transportation engineering. So I'm teaching courses in traffic capacity, demand forecasting, intelligent transportation systems. So I would say, and it may sound a little immodest, but, you know, this is my expertise. I'm talking about my expertise.
Right.
So that's why I took this thing Very seriously, and you know, the council appointed me to every technical committee related to the project.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, there was politics involved there too, because the other members were carefully selected, so the vote would always turn out to 7-1 or 4-1. So every time I had the opposing position, because I strongly feel that rail does not fit Honolulu.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, often every year and a half or so, I visit Athens, where I have my parents are there and all. Athens has rail systems, and I believe in a city of 5 million people.
Mm-hmm.
With the type of density that they have in Athens, rail is a good idea. I would never go there in the newspapers or on the radio and say, look at your metro, you wasted your money and it's useless.
Mm-hmm.
Not true. So the recommendation I give is location specific. Rail works in Chicago. Rail works in New York. Rail works in San Francisco. Rail does not work in Los Angeles. It does not work in Atlanta. It does not work in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to take my word for it. The statistics show so. I mean, there is no more expensive and least utilized system than Miami.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, one interesting thing about Miami is that it's very similar to Honolulu in terms of feel. You know, a density and a suburban place, a summer place, good weather. And also, Miami has a heavy rail system. All of it is concrete, elevated, very similar to what mm-hmm. we try to design. And from Miami, we have over 20 years of experience. You can't say it didn't work year one, it didn't work year two, year three. 20 years and it's not working? I mean, come on.
Right.
And it goes through campuses.
Right.
Multiple campuses. Our system, oh, come on. You have to wait 20 to 30 years, if at all, to ever arrive at the UH.
Right.
So the original system is not even designed to serve campuses. So too many flaws in the
and
system.
And campuses is what contribute a lot to our traffic jam
yes,
in the morning.
Yes, exactly. You are absolutely right. And not only in the morning, but our students have midday jobs,
right.
Part-time jobs.
Right.
So either with mopeds or cars, they zoom all around town to mm-hmm. to make a buck or two to pay for their tuition and their room and board and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a very active community, the young people. So.
Okay, we got a call. Ed, good morning. Got a question or comment for Parnas?
Yeah, just a quick question.
Yes, sir.
Regarding your qualifications, you say you're an engineer. Do you have a license to practice engineering in the state of Hawaii? Or are you a licensed engineer in the state of Hawaii? If you're not, why not?
Okay.
I'll listen for your answer. But.
Sure. No, I'm not licensed in the state of Hawaii. I'm licensed in the European Union, and that is good enough for, being a professor. I do not have the intent of being a consultant and design systems for any place. My position as a professor is to design the forecast and to assess the systems at a strategic and planning level. So I'm not planning to do the structural design for the rail or for anybody's home. Therefore, a license to practice in Hawaii is not really a relevant requirement for me. Most people that they hold PhDs, extremely rare to find people with doctorate degree and a licensure. Licensure is to practice, so I'm not, strictly speaking, a practicing engineer. I'm a professor of transportation. And I thank you for your question. It clarifies things. Remember that licensing engineers design what people forecast and plan.
Mm-hmm.
So those folks, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're under us in any sense. It's just a different application of our field. So I would openly admit to you that I have no qualification to check the retaining wall at any retaining wall in your neighborhood or, you know. But I can, by inspection, I can tell you that I suspect A, B, or C, and then I'll direct you to an expert to assess the situation.
That brings an interesting point. I've had discussions with actual engineers mm-hmm. who are licensed here.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them say, they, as much as they would love to participate,
mm-hmm.
they couldn't because the manner in which the contracts were allowed and the manner mm-hmm. it was already previously done. So even if you were licensed here, Ed, I think the way things have played out,
mm-hmm.
it wouldn't matter unless you worked for the special interests
right.
that Hanneman handed the $80 million.
Right.
Is it Parker
right.
Brinkhoff or
Parson Brinkhoff. Parson Brinkhoff.
And so I've actually spoken with other people who would love to have competed, and they
mm-hmm.
do have license,
mm-hmm.
so
mm-hmm.
probably it's good that you do have a job over at UH because you wouldn't get one.
Oh, no, I wouldn't, yes. And in fact, you know, this is an interesting discussion in the blogs, particularly on the architects, because the IA, the American Institute of Architects, Hawaii chapter, went public with opposition to the Hanneman plan,
mm-hmm.
and they insist on light rail.
Mm-hmm.
And then there, Ian Lin, who used to be one of the better reporters on the Advertiser, and all, he has an independent blog,
mm-hmm.
and he found scoops that the Hanneman administration sent letters and emails to the architects, and they said, you know what? You want to have work on the rail stations and the design? Get behind the project.
Right.
I don't want any opposition at all, so...
You know, while speaking, and I had meant to, been meaning to do this a while back, that's ilind.net. That's
yes.
I, yeah. The alphabet I, L-I-N-D,
L-I-N-D yes.
dot net.
Net.
And
like
folks,
that,
if
yeah.
you want to read some good stuff, Ian really puts quite a bit of stuff out there, and
mm-hmm.
And he's factual.
Yes.
And really good, and
yeah,
and,
tributes,
and,
yeah.
and, mm-hmm. and invites others to contribute.
Right.
So
right.
That's at ilin.net, and
right.
I've spoken to Ian once in my life.
Right, right.
But it is material that he produced.
Right.
I think, like
right.
myself, I try to just get it out there,
mm-hmm.
and then you make your own decisions.
Right. Right. And the way I understand it, he's not a rail opponent.
Right.
He just wants to investigate the system and that everything is on the up and up. So he's
mm-hmm.
not... I'm personally, I don't mind. I mean, the mayor has labeled me for 3-4 years a rail opponent. Of course, as I said, I fully oppose rail. That's why I ran for mayor, too, because I want to oppose it. And I probably
mm-hmm.
run it again, too,
mm-hmm.
because I think it's a terrible, terrible plan for Honolulu. Terrible.
Mm-hmm.
For the cost.
Mm-hmm.
And for the effectiveness. I mean, the city's environmental study says after you spend $5.4 billion, mass transit ridership will increase from 6% today with just the bus to 7% with a combination of bus and rail.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really does not compute that we're going to spend $5 billion and get a 1% bump in our combined mass transit ridership. Even their own numbers do not make sense. That's why I'm so vocal about this.
Mm-hmm.
It cannot make sense. I mean, at least part of their numbers are honest. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, they, D.C., Miami, you've talked about those, but what about... the environmental impact statement, and one of the things that what annoys me, and
mm-hmm.
because I have a personal interest, I want to see things done. I be careful to say right, because
mm-hmm.
what is right,
mm-hmm.
but the most sensible and reasonable that
right.
less impact on people, the cost of living,
mm-hmm.
and whatever. We're not out here trying to throw marbles in the path of
mm-hmm.
the mayor with this program, and so. A reasonable person, where does the environmental impact statement stand right now? And is that still a problem for the mayor with this program?
Mm-hmm.
The Environmental Protection Agency had
mm-hmm.
comment. So can you
yes.
share your point of view on this?
Yeah, definitely. And I will share actually the facts. The facts is that we have not completed the environmental process. So we are still... at the draft environmental impact statement. As you correctly said, the EPA has several concerns. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has several concerns. I have my concerns in there. A lot of other people have concerns. Number one, they have not addressed them. Number two, they have not provided mitigation. Number three, we're not in a state where the federal government has said, here it is,
mm-hmm.
I sign it, now you have a final environmental impact. There are two critical steps missing in our environmental process. Number one, the federal EIS, the FTA has not signed. FTA is the Federal Transit Administration. Number two, the state environmental statement. Governor Lingle has not seen it.
Mm-hmm.
They have comments, but they have not seen the final, and she has not signed on it.
Mm-hmm.
So, as far as we're concerned, we're still deep in the paperwork stage. There is nothing, I mean, I do not know why he says that he's going to issue contracts and start working in January. Based on what? I mean, even if the Fed sign, where is Lingle's signature?
Mm-hmm.
I know that Governor Lingle has significant concerns.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've seen the comments of the Hawaii State Department of Transportation, and I have not seen the rebuttal of the city. They're not going to. Yeah. No, but you cannot get the signature then.
But one of
how
the
are you going to build in this state if you don't have a state EIS?
I look at Hanneman as being very smart. I mean, he very smart, and he employs some tactics that I would do as well, but I wouldn't be lying to the people or whatever. But to get something accomplished. So he spends your money, the $80 million first. And then it's difficult for you as a taxpayer, even though it's your money, to say, okay, well, just drop it. You've already spent the $80 million.
Yeah.
Oh, don't worry about it, you know. Well, now it's you're over a barrel. You're in a precarious position.
Yeah.
You're having to say, well, you're okay. You've already spent $80 million. Well, I guess you might as well go ahead and finish it.
Right.
And he's playing to that sentence.
Playing to that. But, you know, he's playing a technique that, at least in this location, has failed all the times in the past. I mean, this is the third or fourth rail proposal, and all previous proposals were serious, and they went far, far, and far. I mean, they went to the point that in the BRT case in 2001 with Mayor Harris and Cheryl Soon at DTS, we had a final EIS, a supplementary EIS, and he put the shovel on the ground, and we started constructing a BRT.
Right.
But then he botched the funding agreement. See, that's the thing. There are so many stages that you can boo-boo and lose your federal thing. Harris boo-booed the federal agreement.
Right.
He started construction without negotiating the money. And first in the country, actually, in 2003, we had a reversal of the ROD, reversal of the record on decision. In other words, the FTA said, sorry, we are out. They clearly said, Hanneman is really playing chicken with them or playing bully, like he did with EPA. He sued the EPA, so he has this tendency of trying to bully the authorities.
Right.
But unfortunately, they follow specific rules, and we're going to likely lose. Now, we have not even completed the environmental stage. He may start work, say, January or February, and we are 2 years away from the FFGA. FFGA is the full funding grant agreement.
Right.
That is the stage where essentially the FTA shakes your hand and says, we got a deal here. This $1 billion will be yours. Find the rest of the money. Good luck.
Right.
Go build it.
But we don't
have that.
You
cannot do it 2 years early.
Right.
Yeah, because then they'll come back and they tell you, okay, number one, go do it on your own. Number two, okay, I'll give you $10 million for it, which is a drop in the bucket. And number three, you know, we don't talk to you anymore, like they did for Harris.
Yeah.
We don't like you.
Here's what I find curious, and that is, normally there would be a sitting mayor or sitting leader who proposed this project and would be in place to see at least the bulk of it, you know, in its infancy. For example, you know, he has another 2 years left.
Right.
Now, here's the unique thing about the Hanneman's approach. See, he's proposing and throwing up blocks in the verbal judo that we see him display out there in the media. Here's what's interesting.
He's bolting.
He's leaving. This is what strikes me as being
hilarious.
And I hear people talking, and they come off, and it's like, wow, that's a scholar. I just heard him say the dumbest thing there is, but he spoke like an intelligent person. I mean, not the mayor, but people who buy into this and thinking, well, who's going to shepherd these things through that this mayor is proposing when he has his eyes set on becoming the governor, which is a completely separate...
Right. I mean, time and again, and we know that from the history, from everywhere, Japan, Europe, the United States, a mega project needs the champion. The champion walks off, the mega project dies. And before even he puts anything on the ground, he's bolting already. He has the gubernatorial exploratory committee and whatever. Who's going to do it?
Yeah.
Caldwell?
Yeah.
If I go, I will do it, or Carlisle? I mean...
Right.
5.3 billion rail, and all these folks don't have an interest in that. Probably Carlisle wants to build prisons and double the police and do something about the crime.
Right.
He doesn't want to build rail.
It might be a completely different approach to life. And we, the taxpayer, have spent that. Like I heard guys talking the other day about the bird flu, and we went out and spent $15 million, and where's the bird flu? You know, I thought that is interesting. But I want to go, if I had children, and I would like to send them, in this world apparently what we're dealing with now, I'd send them to the same school or give him the same education this guy Hanneman has. Because it's to be able to do it so overtly.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, you ask him to show you the right hand, he shows you the left hand. You ask him to show both hands, he put both hands behind the back and is able... To explain to you, I am mesmerized by that. I find him entertaining because I watch, and on that note, I'd like to ask you, do you believe that this, in your personal opinion, that this issue has gotten a proper play in the equitable disclosure in public and media?
No, it has not.
What do you think?
Well, the biggest, the most egregious negative thing that it was done, it was that they were able to get away using taxpayer money to promote the project, and not a dime of this money was made available to well-organized opponents. Meaning, you know, we are not random people. We have, you know, HonoluluTraffic.com, the Outdoor Circle, the Sierra Club, and all. There are a lot of organizations that they have mild or strong opposition. How come we didn't get one sheet per week in the newspaper and $1,000? He got, you know, millions of dollars, over $2 million for advertising. How come all of this, they didn't get anything to get the word out? I mean, really, there is no fairness in the game. So most, and that really translated to the crooked vote that they essentially bought the vote. I mean, 50.6% of the people that they voted in 2008, they said they wanted rail. It was a very, very, very slim margin. Of all the people who voted in the mayor election, 50.6% said yes. The director of transportation of the city and county of Honolulu should make a priority the design and construction of a rail system. I mean, if you go to Palo Alto, for example, they're smart people, right? That's Silicon Valley.
Silicon Valley requires
two-thirds for major infrastructure decisions. Two-thirds. So a lot of cities that they are ready to spend billions of dollars, when they put it on the ballot, they require two-thirds majority. In other words, the community really is behind it. Come on now, for 50.6% is behind. Of course, it's democracy, majority and all, but the community is not behind this project. In fact, the community voted 50.6% after they were deluged with positive messages from the unions and from the mayor using taxpayer and union money to go pro-rail. There was never a single commercial on TV, not a single commercial on TV in the previous elections for one, you know, concern about the rail. I mean, we ask people to be concerned and then decide. I would personally stop the rail. I'm not asking everybody else to stop the rail. I'm asking them to educate themselves. Do they really want to spend $4,300 per person, from infants to retirees to everybody? It is per person, not per worker or not per taxpayer. It's per person. To get that system, that is going to increase ridership by the city's own numbers from 6% to 7%. This is, you don't need a professor to tell you that. It is simply ridiculous.
Well, you know, what I want to do is, I know you have contact with Cliff Slater. I'd like to give another hour to this subject and have Slater, if he's available.
Sure, I'll talk to Cliff.
What's disheartening is that while we all have special interests, you know, Cliff may have an interest in, but at least if the facts are the facts and the truth is the truth, I'm willing to listen, regardless if it was from a jackass. As long as they're factual and true, and then whatever he does, let the public sit and be able to determine, give them something. But right now, there's an imbalance in, in information. So if you can, and in the near future, invite you back and have a discussion on numbers and let the public hear and let them go away. And if we end up with two rails, I'm happy with that. But I can say, well, I attempted. And you and I, whomever.
I mean, the beautiful thing about Cliff Slater, I mean, for everybody, he, I think from all of us who speak for or against rail, he is the cleanest. He's a 70-something-year-old, super smart, retired businessman, comfortable with his income, with absolutely no stake, pro or against rail. He doesn't have to, he cannot really, out of his, I mean, I know him for over 10 years, he cannot earn or lose a dime on this rail business. So he simply talks about what is right, the way he feels about it, using federal and city numbers. That's the thing. He doesn't make his own numbers. This, here, this is the federal table XYZ. Look at the rank. and look how useless it is, or look how expensive it is. So I think, yeah, it would be a lot of fun to have him here to explain some of the numbers.
Well, if you would assist in setting it up, I would
be. Yes, absolutely.
We have a caller, Francis.
Yeah, let's see.
And let's see what... But much of this has been... got Ed back. Okay, Ed, shoot.
Yeah, I was listening about his statistic about 54% or more who voted for rail
in
election. But that's only, if you recall, only 30% of the people went to the polls. So
that's correct.
I give no credence to that percent. And secondly, as far as the federal governments go, I just read where... Illinois said $30 more million were given to the state to the city for the rail project. What's that all about?
Yes, sir.
I'll hang up and listen.
Yes, that's that. You are absolutely correct. This is the second, I believe, and probably final installment of our senator's ability to bring us design money. All this is design money, if you can believe it. Both in California and in Tampa, they built 10 miles of six-lane freeways for about $300 million. I'm not changing the subject. Just listen me out. In California and in Tampa, Florida, they spent $300 million to develop roughly 10 miles of freeway that a lot of people use. We are spending the identical amount in the design and planning of the rail. $300 million of paperwork. That's your money and mine. That's the GET tax, not all of it being saved for construction. And thanks to Senator Inouye, we get like roughly $50 million contribution out of that from the feds. Time and again, I said, we got to be very careful, because this time the numbers are against us. In the first time we went for rail, the share of our funding was 80-20. We would pay 20%. That was the HART project. If you've been around for a while, I wasn't here then. I came here in 1990. But in the HART proposal, 20% only was the local contribution. 80% was fed. Then we went to the 1990s Mayor Fassi proposal. At that time, the funding formula was 50-50. We didn't do that. Now we're doing the totally loser proposition, which is the feds pay at maximum 23%. So 77% is coming from local pockets. And you see that in the design, because the design of the project is $300 million and only roughly $45 million will be from federal funds, which again, of course, is our federal taxes, but people consider it as if it is a gift. So this time the proportion is really totally against us. People need to recall that the H3 freeway, which cost only $1.6 billion, that's not to say that $1.6 billion is cheap, but quite a few people say, hey, Kaneohe and whatever, they got their H3, we need the rail. Well, there is a big difference, and $1.6 billion in today's money, $1.6 billion versus $5.4 billion. That's over three times as much. And the H3 freeway was 80-20 in the right direction. We paid only 20% for it. And in fact, we never took a hit, right? Because through our gasoline taxes, we paid for it. I mean, the DOT built it. We didn't have any special assessment. Now we have a special assessment. We pay an extra tack on on our very regressive and very high GET tax to pay for rail. And the money that accumulates really is going a lot for paperwork. And speaking of politics, coming up, what is it, Monday or Tuesday, when the mayor has a... an event at the Blaisdell Center. See?
Tuesday, September 29th,
there you go.
The Neil Blaisdell Center.
Yeah.
He's going to have a City and County of Honolulu's Road Work Symposium. Tell me about that. The symposium will outline the City and County of Honolulu's road work project schedules and opportunities, totaling over $100
million. There you go.
Big
there
money,
go.
Big man.
I mean, we're talking politics at its best. I mean, months or maybe weeks before he steps out of the mayor's race and into the gubernatorial race, he's buying votes at $100 million. Now, this is the irony of the thing. Honolulu has the third worst pavements in the nation. Okay, so...
And that's not your personal opinion. That
No. That's the Trip was here. Trip is a Washington institution, and they do rankings. I mean, people who use the internet, they can go into pavement quality, city rankings or state rankings, and they'll see that we are absolutely in the bottom. The top or worst top, third from the bottom, I'm sorry, pavement quality. After 6 years, Hahnemann realized that maybe we have a pavement problem. I guess he never drives to see the potholes. So, bottom line is that the city and county of Honolulu has 2,600 miles of roads, okay? Even if half of them need repair, pavement repair, for the next 10 years, and I calculated that, I post it on my blog, we require roughly $84 million per year for the next 10 years just to bring half of our pavements to adequate quality.
Mm-hmm.
And after 6 years, he's doing in one time $100 million thing, and he's making a big brouhaha. It's just, you know, we have to just go away from this politicians and politics as usual.
But $80 million to your friends could pave the roads, make a good cushion for you politically. You would never fill the potholes.
That's right.
And now $100 million... So that's $180 million that he gets to stand back and say, as governor, I was able to expend and manage $180 million.
Yeah, well.
As we're going, God, I wish I had a recorder because I hit a pothole and I didn't hear exactly what he said.
Right.
You know, it's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing.
Lana, good morning. How are you?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I just had to call and say, attaboy.
Okay, well, thank you.
I'm against the whole thing, too.
Thank you.
And you know, you were talking about the inconvenience when people live, like, I live in Apaea.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been here since 73. I lived in Makale District before.
Okay.
But 73, and then we don't have the bus line coming up all the way to the state park. That's
mm-hmm.
the end. And it just goes to Ka'amilo. So all the senior citizens got together and petitioned that they want, you know, little small little shuttle bus
right.
to come up. But it's not all the way up now. It's only by the rest home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, you try, look, nobody uses it, even the seniors. And it's a waste of money. They're hiring the drivers.
Right.
And the bus. And you, the most people I ever saw, maybe five people taking that shuttle, and the bus driver got a wait in that corner, you know.
Right, right.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, I mean, I know the seniors meant
mm-hmm,
well,
mm-hmm.
but like you were saying, the way the land is built and people are so in a rush, it's convenient.
Convenient, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and everybody has family, they have elders that they got to go pick up and take them
right.
to the doctor.
Right.
You cannot use this.
You cannot. I mean, what people want is, and we know that for over, you know, four decades,
yeah.
people like door-to-door service.
Exactly.
Door-to-door. I mean, that's the convenience. Even if the car is not air-conditioned or whatever, at least it takes you door-to-door.
Yeah,
having to walk, having to transit and all, it's transfer. These are humbug things. And particularly, you know, the research in the nation shows that clearly that trains are not appropriate for our elders.
Mm-hmm.
They have elevators, they have escalators, they have transfers. It's very humbug for the elderly. They cannot go through all that. They want their handy van to come in the front of their doorstep, pick them up, take them to
right,
police
station. Right, because nobody walks several blocks.
That's right.
But from where I live, you know where the bus stops?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's quite a bit of walking,
it
you
is.
Know?
And even the sidewalk,
I'm in my 60s, so, you know, I'm getting there.
That's right. And even the sidewalks are not even.
Exactly.
I mean, we should be spending money
to make... One way up and one way down. It's very
right.
dangerous. And now we have terrific traffic.
Right.
When I moved here, you hardly saw any traffic.
I know.
But now it's so popular up the hill.
It is. I mean, nice views and clean air. Yeah.
But mm-hmm. anyway, I just had to say, attaboy, because I've been listening to you from day one, and I really appreciate you and Mr. Carroll, because,
you
know, he does the environmental thing,
mm-hmm.
and I really appreciate you guys there, because you folks have the influence.
Well, thank you, and
okay.
you have the influence, too, so
oh, yeah, I try to, I tell everybody, but you know how everybody's so busy, nobody, like, listen. They're listening, but go right to the earlobes, you know?
Yeah.
So, anyway, thank you.
Sure, righty.
Okay, keep
Take
it
care.
Up. Bye-bye.
And thanks, Lana. One of the things that I know we there's issues on sewer. Real quickly,
right.
we got less than five minutes. But real quick, what's happening with the sewer issues?
Well, what's happening now, the sad thing is Honolulu is the last city of its size, roughly 1 million people or more, that doesn't have secondary sewage treatment. So The way we do it is that we take, you know, we treat the effluent the first stage, and then we go 3 to 6 miles outside in the ocean and we dump it. The EPA said that that's no longer acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
And the last city who over 10 years ago was San Diego, and they settled with the EPA.
Mm-hmm.
Hahnemann sued the EPA in federal court in San Francisco. They lost.
Right.
Now they're counter-suing, so I don't know what he's doing. I have lost track of where that suit is.
Yeah.
I know that EPA is up his neck and, you know,
mm-hmm.
Pushing for things.
Yeah.
But I don't know exactly where that lawsuit stands right now.
Well, it's all to block and bridge. If I can just throw out something to defend.
Maybe.
But again, to recap, one of the most frightening things to occur here that is occurring
mm-hmm.
is that he will emerge as a gubernatorial candidate
mm-hmm.
and in turn leave us with, and people should be absolutely alarmed now
mm-hmm.
because Kirk Caldwell, we've not tasked him with telling us, and he's saying he wants to be mayor. This is $5 billion or more, so that's
right.
with the guy that planned it
right.
and has an interest. What about the guy that has no knowledge
right.
of this? It probably will double in cost.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
That's the easiest thing to do, doubling cost for a system that we have no familiarity
yeah.
to build.
Well, and who's going to be accountable for the missteps? Hannah?
I know.
Well, he'll be
in No, he's out of the office.
So, folks, if you're out there and you're listening, you think this is about pulling strings at Hannemann and picking on him, listen. It is you who will be left holding the bag. So however you interpret this conversation, just keep in mind it is you who will hold the bag. It's nothing personal. So, Panos, thank you for joining
yes.
me.
And
again, hopefully you can set that up with Cliff. And
yes.
when you're ready, the sooner the better.
Right.
And
folks who want to get in touch with me, they can email me pdp@hawaii.edu.
PDP.
PDP, Peter David Peter,
mm-hmm.
@hawaii.edu if they have questions, and I always answer my emails.
Okay.
Thank you, Carol.
All righty. And this is the Carol Cox Show. You can pick this up at carol@carolcox.com, carolcox.com. And again, go to the iLind, that's alphabet, iLind.net. And look at some of his blogs and just for a campaign of education, you can see the other side and get more information. Okay, well, thank you for joining me, and I hope to see you next week. Aloha.
This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.